Greetings, salutations, and positive vibrations, and welcome to the World Class Football Podcast, Off the Post. I am your host with the most, football journalist, Nick Maitland. And of course, today we have the top news for you in football in our beloved Barbados, our resplendent region, and our whole wide world. First of all, on today's episode, I want to start by saying my deepest condolences and my thoughts and prayers are with the families of the late Dennis Johnson and the late DJ John Doe Warren Fort, members of our family here at The Nation, One Caribbean Media, two sons of Starcom Network, and within 1 week, they have gone home to their maker. We give thanks for their work. We give thanks for their presence. We give thanks for the lives that they have touched. And we pray that we will never forget them and never forget what they meant to us. Trailblazers, legends of our craft, firm craftsmen of our fate, rest eternal grant unto them, and may light perpetual shine upon them. May they rest in peace. Now, our national under-20 men's team, they were in action in the 2021 CONCACAF under-20 men's qualifiers for the tournament next year. And unfortunately, our under-20 boys lost all three of their games against Puerto Rico, Bermuda, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines. In the first game, we lost 3-2 to Bermuda. Bermuda went down to 10 men in the first half, and Barbados, we just couldn't make our numerical advantage count. We gained a penalty, went up 1-0, and then suddenly we were trailing 2-1. Stoppage time, in the second minute of stoppage time, we equalized 2-2, and then celebrated once again, and Bermuda scored a third. Very disappointing loss, very hard loss to take. And I think psychologically we defeated ourselves. We never played like a team with the advantage. And when we got the penalty, we scored and we celebrated as though we had won the Premier League. That's a pet peeve of mine. I don't like teams that celebrate 1-0 or an equalizer. And we did both those things. And it came back to haunt us. We lost the first game 3-2. In the second game against Puerto Rico, we fared a bit better defensively. We lost 1-0. Puerto Rico, sharper, fitter, more technically astute, tactically as well. We were chasing the game for probably 80% of the game. We created chances and we gave them some trouble when they sat back off of us. But in the end, Puerto Rico dominated us and maybe could have scored more. And in our final game, lost 2-0 to St. Vincent and the Grenadines. It was 0-0 at halftime, but St. Vincent showed that they were a bit fitter and more fearless than we were and gained a 2-0 victory. And so, disappointing to say the least, but we have to consider that our boys did not have the greatest preparation time. We were not playing competitive football. You need to be playing competitively. You need to be playing matches in order to get that fitness under your belt. And that is something that really counted against Coach Fitzgerald Carter and his men. So we won't be too critical, but definitely it was a harsh wake-up call for all the national teams this year. Three first-round exits for the men, the senior men, for the under-17 girls and the under-20 boys. And we will put that down to the lack of match practice. But definitely, it should be a launching pad for better things because this is not where we want to be in our football. I spoke to a former junior national in Rashawn Speedy Gittins. I think he was an under-17 captain in his day, and he's a budding football analyst. And he is here on the podcast giving his analysis of that first game, Bermuda versus Barbados.
I'm not coming here, let me state in the beginning, I'm not coming here to criticize the young under-20s. I mean, it must be stated that There were a number of debutants, a fair amount of debutants. I think it was more than half the squad making their debut on the international scene. So there are a couple things I can point out straight off the bat that, you know, raised some flags and had people, you know, questioning the preparation of the team. Like the way how we conceded goals in quick succession, like immediately after we scored, we conceded right after, even after the goal in dying minutes. I thought that we would have held on to the point, but as soon as I blinked, the ball was in our half again. We conceded in the blink of an eye. So I just think that it all boils down to what is done on the training pitch. I mean, to be fair to these boys, they weren't given enough time to really prepare, to prepare in the whole. Get their minds right psychologically. I mean, the fitness was good, but I mean, pretending to be sharp on the ball and really having that game plan. Again, I'm not criticizing nothing here. I'm not criticizing the coach or anything like that, but this is just my opinion and me stating what I believe. Could be some factors which will reflect the outcomes, the results that we are getting. But I think that we could have been more composed on the ball, less long balls, keep the ball to foot. And also, I think that we could have played the ball in their half some more. Like, we were sitting back too often. I think we could have been pressuring their centre backs, especially when we were down. I think we were laying back too much. Like, we were almost hoping and wishing. Yeah, man, there are some things that needed tidying up. I think that all boils down to preparing, that preparation stage. But our defense, man, we conceded no goals, those goals in quick succession, man. I think these things needed to be worked on. Our concentration levels need to be raised. But yeah, that's all in all. Must give credit to the Bermuda's attacking abilities. They have some very silky skills at top. But we give a relatively strong fight, a good battle. But I think there are some areas where we need to improve on.
Thank you, Speedy. Well said. And like I said, the lack of match practice really came against us. But back to the drawing board. And we will hope for better in the future. When we come back to Off the Post, I want to introduce you to one of Barbados's budding sports journalists now, in Jaden Whitelaw. And I want to hear about his opinions on this craft of ours, this thing of ours, as well as the beautiful game. And you'll be hearing from him a lot more in the future as well. So in the spirit of supporting and uplifting our under 20 boys, when we come back, we have Jaden Whitelaw making his debut on Off the Post, the world-class football podcast.
You can contact your Nation Publishing subscription team 7 days a week in 7 different ways. Call customer service any day at 430-5550. Call subscriptions at 430-5503 or 04. Email subscribers at nationnews.com. Email ePaperSupport at nationnews.com. Visit www.nationnews.com and select print subscriptions. Visit www.nationnews.com and select ePaper subscriptions. Visit our office on Fontebelle St. Michael. If your call is not answered, please leave a message. We are here to serve you. Nation News, your news, your time, your way.
Welcome back to Off the Post, the world-class football podcast. As I promised you, I have a special guest, Mr. Jaden Whitelaw. He is a budding sports journalist and commentator, pundit, all of that. And I remember when I was in his shoes not too long ago, and I wanted to really get into this field and make my mark, and some brilliant people helped me along the way. Jaden, how are you? Welcome to Off the Post.
Hi, Nick. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm doing well, just a little busy with school, but I'm happy for the opportunity.
Oh, fantastic. Where are you going to school right now?
I'm going to Queen's College in my final year of sixth form.
Okay, what are you studying in sixth form?
I'm studying law, sociology, computer science, and Caribbean studies.
Law, you do a bit of reading, sociology as a lot of reading as well, but a study of society and how the parts of society really work. And I'm sure a lot of your sociology lessons maybe have centered around the current corona climate that we are experiencing and how that is affecting all the different
aspects of society, but of course, I digress. But your sporting history, tell me about how you got into sports and then how you transitioned to the sports journalism.
So it's a great story. When I was probably 9 or 10, I was really, really interested in sports. And I used to watch every Saturday and Sunday with my dad. And I was like, I really like this. And at that time, I wasn't very fit, I must say. I was a little bit chunky and I wasn't really cut out to be an athlete. So I was saying, I really like this, but what's something I can do in my life that revolves around this? So then I did a little research and I looked up jobs to do with sports. And then I came upon sports journalist and I fell in love ever since. Someone who can write the stories for athletes and talk about the current affairs of any sport. And it's been my career path since the end of primary school to right now.
It's just like me, because I wanted to be in football specifically. Football is my favorite sport after cricket. I mean, all Caribbean boys, their favorite sport is cricket. At some point in time, we played cricket, whether at school, in the road, at home, on the pasture. We love cricket. But with football, I wanted to play football. I wanted to be a big part of football. I wanted to coach at one point. I never wanted to referee. That's another story. But I wanted to be in the sport. And I played it at secondary school. But I realized, you know, I was a bit chunky as well. I'm still a bit chunky. But we're less chunky now. I never really had the build and the fitness of a footballer. And I really wanted to stay in the game, and I saw many opportunities on journalism, sports journalism, especially the punditry. Punditry was where I wanted to be, and that's where I started, and that's what I still do, especially here on the Off the Post podcast, the World Class Football podcast. But I totally understand wanting to be in the sport, and that is the thing about us journalists. I think we are even more passionate about the sports than the athletes themselves, and as a result, we can do great work. Your surname is Whitelaw. I'm picking up a bit of an accent on you. Now, my surname, Maitland, a lot of people ask me, you ain't from Barbados? And I say, no, it's a Scot. I am from Barbados, but it is a Scottish surname. What about you?
That's actually great, because my last name is actually Scottish as well. From my grandparents. They were of Scottish descent, and they lived in England, and actually my granddad moved to South Africa, and my dad was actually born in South Africa. And then after, when he was 5, they moved to Canada, and they've lived in Canada ever since. So my dad is Canadian. I've been to Canada nearly every year of my life, and I love it up there. So with Scottish descent, but Canadian as well.
Where were you born?
So I was born in Barbados. Yes, mm-hmm. I am Barbadian, born at the QEH, but I visit Canada frequently, and I do actually have Canadian citizenship. My favorite sport, it actually changed. So around second and third form, it was basketball.
Okay.
I was just in love with basketball. My favorite team is the Toronto Raptors, and I got to witness them win the championship in 2019.
Interesting.
But then I think with convenience and time of games, the games used to be played at 9 p.m., 10 p.m. at night. It wasn't really ideal for me. So then I really switched to football, and I haven't looked back. Football has been my love, the Premier League. My favorite club is Arsenal, and I watch it every single weekend and just enjoy it so much.
What is it about this beautiful game, this soccer, this football? What is it about football that drew you to football in general? And then talk about that Arsenal link and how that was established.
I think it might have to do with my Scottish descent, you know. I feel some genes in there maybe gravitate towards football. And just the passion. And I still watch so many historical matches, the comebacks, the flair of the game, the excitement. Everything surrounded the game. And how I got into Arsenal, it was through my dad. My dad, when he came to Barbados some 20 plus years ago, he walked in, I believe it was Bubba's, and he met up with a friend. The friend was an Arsenal fan, and he said, hey, I like how this team's playing, and he started supporting them. And then when I was born and when I got a bit older, I started supporting Arsenal.
Do you watch or do you follow Belgian football?
So recently, well, I currently work at Next Up Sports Empire as a sports journalist, and that has really gotten me into Barbados football. I must admit, before, I wasn't really too interested in Barbados football, but this job has really helped me to focus on that and to really look at the players and how they play. And yeah, I do watch them when they are playing.
Mm-hmm. So you've been following the under 20 boys?
Yes, I have.
What do you think so far? I mean, we lost 2 games, 1-0 to Puerto Rico, 3-2 to Bermuda. Bermuda, we were down, we were up a man. They were down to 10 men. Disappointing, but from what you saw, what are your thoughts?
I think there's definitely some positive signs. Of course, the team, I remember the Puerto Rico game, they were 10 debutants for the team. So a lot of inexperience, and I think that was clearly shown in the 2 of the 3 goals conceded. But I believe there's some positive signs, especially with the intent to attack, the passing. There's some bright spots in that team for sure. And the Puerto Rico game, the 1-0 defeat, I will admit, I thought Puerto Rico was a level above, but I still think Barbados, this under 20 team, has a lot of potential.
It's really unfortunate though that there's no local football, especially in the local league, that you can, you know, follow and get to learn even more of the local players, even at the senior level as well. But there will be time for that, I'm sure. I'm sure that we will have things under control to a degree to allow us to resume football. But I know in the meantime, you'll still be watching the national teams and, you know, watching the international game and really working on your craft. So I just want to know from you, ultimately, was your ultimate goal in this thing of ours, sports journalism? Where do you want to see your name, Jaden Whitelaw, when all is said and done?
So honestly, it varies from day to day. Some days I'm so attracted by the football commentators. Like, I don't know if you know Peter Drury.
Listen. Don't you ain't got to talk to me about commentators. Commentary was probably the reason I started to watch football. Not for the football itself, but for how poetic and fluent and wow. Sports commentators in general. So yeah, I know Peter Drury and yeah, the poet of football. Yeah, yes. Continue, Jaden.
Definitely. And then some days would be the pundits and the past players just talking about football, and even just a host of a football show or football podcast. Like it just varies day by day. And I know down the line I will definitely focus on one specific path, but it's really dynamic right now.
Okay. Well, Jaden, we will hear your voice on this platform once again. And I mean, we invite you to come back as often as you want, because we want to also use this to motivate and to elevate. I rhymed on purpose. We want to motivate and elevate our young men, especially our under 20 boys. So make sure you continue to support your under 20 boys. And Jaden, we will continue to support you in this journey. So thanks for being here. And we will catch you probably next week, right?
Yes, most definitely. I will be available for sure.
That's a good man there, Jaden Whitelaw. And as I said, you'll be hearing a lot more from him in the future. So stay tuned to Off The Post. Now we switch a little bit to our international segment. I just want to share with you some big news that caught my eye over the past week. I want to say congratulations and well played. 2-time World Cup winner Carly Lloyd walked off the pitch for the last time last Sunday as the Chicago Red Stars beat her New York, New Jersey Gotham FC 1-0 in the National Women's Soccer League playoffs. The double Olympic gold medalist donned the US women's national team jersey for the last time in October in a friendly against South Korea, ending her international career as the second most capped player in world soccer. And she was a former 2-time FIFA Player of the Year, and she says she plans to stay involved in soccer after her competitive career. And she repeated that pledge on Sunday. So as I said, congratulations and well played to Carly Lloyd, one of the greatest women's players in her generation and certainly of all time. English soccer star Marcus Rashford received a distinguished award from Prince William on Tuesday after he spearheaded a campaign to help fight child poverty and hunger during the COVID-19 pandemic. And he received his MBE at the ceremony at Windsor. Was in recognition of his services to vulnerable children, and he successfully fought to extend free school meals to vulnerable children during the holidays, and he even got the attention of Prime Minister Boris Johnson. So well done, congratulations, and well played to Marcus Rashford. Now, I want to speak about something that is becoming an increasingly popular topic on football shows and football analysis shows in our world today. And I want to speak about this sack race, managers being sacked. Personally, I have developed a new philosophy where I do not think it is my place to advocate for the firing or the relieving of duties of any person. I believe, especially now in these uncertain financial times, I should not be advocating for the relieving of any person from their post. We will look at why we may think they're not doing a good job, and we will put forward reasons why we say so, and maybe reasons how they can improve. But for me, I do not want to advocate for the firing of anyone. Many people go on social media and abuse football managers and say they should be fired and all of these things, and some people go really far with the abuse as well. As we saw with the case of Steve Bruce at Newcastle United Football Club, it can take a toll on your mental health. So we have to be careful and we have to be mindful of what we say concerning someone and their job and even the character of the person. 11 games into the Premier League season, English Premier League season, 5 managers have been sacked. 3 have been sacked in 7 days. Oh my goodness, Dean Smith's dismissal by Aston Villa means more managers have lost their job in England's top flight already this season than in the whole of last season, with this being the highest number of departures at this stage of a campaign for 17 years. Let me tell you who's been sacked. On the 3rd of October, Watford's Zisco Munoz was the first to go. Sat with the Hornets in 14th, 7 games into the season, he was replaced by Claudio Ranieri. On the 20th of October, the aforementioned Steve Bruce left his post by mutual consent and he has been replaced by Eddie Howe. On the 1st of November, Tottenham dismissed Nuno Espirito Santo after 4 months in the post and he was replaced by Antonio Conte. On the 6th of November, Norwich's Daniel Farke was sacked hours after their first Premier League win of the season, and they are yet to appoint a successor. And on the 7th of November, the aforementioned Dean Smith was dismissed 2 days after the club's 5th successive league defeat, and he has not been replaced as yet. So the sack race continues. I will not speak about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer this week. He is one probably who's maybe will be part of the sack race, but I digress. I spoke with a local Tottenham Hotspur fan. His name is Shano Ronaldinho Cattle. From the time I met this young man many, many years ago, I marveled at his name and of course his middle name. You know, I am a guy, I am all about the names. My cat is Paul Pogba, for crying out loud. I'm all about the names. The names mean a lot to me. So Shano Ronaldinho, he's always been a good boy and a very respectful young man. He's a footballer as well. So I asked him about his affiliation with Tottenham, of course, and what he thought about Antonio Conte joining his club mid-season. Very unlikely for Conte. Your affiliation with Spurs, a lot of young men your age don't support Spurs. They normally support the Manchester United, the Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, you know, Barcelona, Real Madrid. So how did you get affiliated with Tottenham Hotspur?
So my dad is a Tottenham supporter and his love for the club came around when he went England. Mm-hmm. So I just I guess I just followed on the line.
Is it that you love Spurs because of him only, or you've grown to appreciate the club?
It started off as me just liking him because my dad liked it, but now I've grown to a point where it is my actual favorite club.
Shano Ronaldinho Cattle, the guy with the most brilliant middle name in the whole of Barbados. I've never yet met anyone with as great a middle name as yours. Now, I like people to call me Berbatov, but that's not my given name. That's not my legal name. But Ronaldinho, wow. How does it feel to have a middle name like Ronaldinho and understand the gravity of that man's legend and his stardom in football?
I mean, it feels good, but I just hope to live up to the name.
So now that you're in Bahamas, you playing any football? You involved in any football clubs?
Not a club, but I play for the school that I attend to currently.
Okay, what position you play?
Defensive mid.
Okay, and I think your coach probably put you there because of your height?
Yeah, I was mostly playing the defense when I was young because of the height and the stature I have.
Excellent. Well, here's hoping that Ronaldinho, Shano Ronaldinho, can hopefully, I know you want to live up to that name, so here's hoping that you can do so, even from the defensive midfield position. Speaking of defense, at Spurs, y'all would have had a bit of, you know, a lot of different managers over the last few years, and now you have Antonio Conte, who is a former Inter Milan manager, former Chelsea manager. How do you feel, first of all, with him being in charge, and what do you expect?
When I first saw that he was leaving the club, I was a bit surprised seeing how he, as you said, was a Chelsea manager.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems the club put a lot of faith into him, and he's providing results so far. But I could only hope that he improves the team to the point where they were in the days of Pochettino.
The sacking of, first of all, Jose Mourinho. What you thought about Jose being the manager, and do you think that they sacked him too soon? Right before the League Cup final, do you think they sacked him too soon?
Yeah, they sacked him way too soon. I wasn't expecting him to go because he made one of the best straight partnerships in the Premier League history.
That is true. Son and Kane.
Yeah.
So he left and Nuno came in. And the thing about Nuno, I understand Nuno was not their first choice, but it seems like Nuno was hired just as a stopgap and they were still flirting and courting Conte behind the scenes. You think it was unfair to Nuno? What do you think about his tenure, 4 months in charge?
To a certain point, it was unfair because they didn't really put a lot of faith into him. But at the same time, he wasn't really providing the big results. Like, he lost every single London Derby so far for the season. And he lost the game against Crystal Palace, which was our first loss since 2010. So I guess it comes down to a point of both being treated unfairly, but also not really providing the results the club was looking for.
Very true. Very well said also. So this season now, what do you expect from Tottenham Hotspur, especially having a manager who's a strict disciplinarian like Antonio Conte?
I know most people, when they get a new manager, they'll be saying they'll hold the Wendy League. But knowing the team so far and how the team is playing, I'm not really expecting that. The most I'm looking for is at least to reach the finals of the Conference League and to at least get Champions League football for next season. But I know that that would be a strenuous task, especially with the defense that the team currently has.
Very true. In terms of players then, what players or what positions would you like to see the club invest in the next window? Because I'm sure Antonio Conte would have told them he needs to go in the transfer market. And I think you do. So what positions or what players do you think you should improve on for Spurs?
Ben Davies, he's not really a centre-back, so it's going to take some time to get a new centre-back, but that position needs to be improved also, and they also need to get a new creative midfielder for the role, seeing how the front line isn't really getting any service, and it's only coming from the right winger, Lucas.
Interesting. Shano, well, we're hoping, with your preliminary thoughts, that we can see some changes in Spurs. I know this is the international weekend, but hopefully from next week, or next weekend, we can see some improvement in Spurs. And personally, I think that Antonio Conte has already raised the profile of Tottenham. And it is just to stop this continuous carousel of managers and settle on one person and settle on some success, like how you did with Pochettino. And I think everything will go smoothly from there.
Yeah, I believe the same thing. Conte is a big name in football and he brings a lot to the table for the club. So I'm sure that he will, in time, bring something to the team.
Yeah, Shano, well done. A big one there. Shano Ronaldinho giving his expert analysis on Tottenham Hotspur. And I'm hoping that you win the Conference League, and that would be a good historical fact for Spurs to be the first team to win the UEFA Conference League. That's not a real honor that you want, but it's something, and Harry Kane will be maybe glad for that as well. Let's travel over to Spain, Barcelona in particular, and Xavi Hernandez. He's the new manager there. He took charge of his duties as head coach for the first time at Barcelona on Tuesday, introducing himself and his new coaching team to the squad. The players were called into the Ciutat Esportiva earlier than normal at 9 o'clock in the morning, with Joan Laporta also present to see the new coach. Xavi made it clear that he intended to impose rules, regulations, and discipline within the squad in order to compete at the highest level. Xavi explained what he is expecting in terms of rules and behaviors such as dining together, resting and sleeping well, spending more time in the club's facilities to exercise, and bring back fines for lateness. In terms of his philosophy, Xavi demands possession, positional play, high pressing, and playing out from the back. There's been a lot of positivity from the Barcelona fans, so let's see where Xavi can take this club. Well, I think that is it for us here on Off the Post for another week. Thank you for joining us as we discuss the biggest news in our local, regional, and international football. Of course, you have been a world-class audience. This has been the World Class Football Podcast, and I have been your world-class host, Brother Nick Maitland. I give thanks for all of you. See you later.